Chapter 9. First Contact. "I'm John Kennedy," said the squid, stepping forward. Well, slithering. A few others had arrived quietly behind him. Halleck and Sage stood silent. Though his amnesia had blocked the time and place, he had absorbed extensive training in good manners as seen in the Indian way. If you did not understand something, you kept silent. You waited for the meaning to appear, for comprehension to dawn. It was also respectful to leave pauses after someone spoke. It was wrong to leap in immediately, showing yourself to be a fool, brash, rude, and thoughtless. The silence grew. A minute and a half can seem like forever at the first meeting of alien races. The squid stood frozen, as if in a game of statues. Jenny and Pricecheck, a little back from the group, watched with interest, his arm around her shoulders. Finally, the tension became unbearable. Something had to be done, and Sage made the decision to meet like with like. He stepped forward. "I'm Pope Francis." John Kennedy was certainly an odd name for a squid from beyond the galaxy, but the squid had been so intent on their own peculiar form of linguistics that their practical research had been, perhaps, inadequate. Seeing that a successful two-sentence exchange had at last been achieved, the rest of the squadron stepped forward and introduced themselves in like manner. "I'm John Chang. I'm Mohammed Schmidt. I'm Muhammad Wang Smith. I'm Obi-Wan Mohammed." At that moment, when it seemed that nothing weirder could happen, Pricecheck stepped forward. He was full of joy. He remembered his long, agonizing experience in picking out a name that would help him blend into an unfamiliar land, earning him respect and credibility. He remembered his many missteps and rejections and the humiliating laughter. Maybe his long, painful search for a name was not without meaning, not the absurd caprice of a cruel, uncaring universe without any organizing moral principle. He could guide these strangers, spare them the pain he had gone through, welcome them graciously when they had come so far. He could be a bridge, a mentor, an example in this matter of names. Pricecheck held out his hand and clasped a faintly pulsing tentacle. "I'm Alexander Flintstone Laszlo Buddy Macadamian Pricecheck," he said, with the deep assurance of one who knows his way. "Why Macadamian, you ask?" Having steeped yourself in the First Chronicle, you doubtless remember that the original name in question had been Buddy Mac, not Buddy Macadamian. But remember also that Pricecheck, though slightly odd, was a genius. And his conversations with Halleck and Sage had increased his sensitivity to the rhythm and texture of words a thousandfold. At this moment, he knew instinctively that Buddy Mac would offend the squid deeply. It did not scan. Amid all the drama of the last half hour, almost no one had noticed a strange thing. Not strange in the way of invisible shimmering barriers and landings of alien races, but strange in the more ordinary way of someone acting entirely out of character. Jenny sidled unobtrusively up to Ruby. From the first faintly glowing appearance of the spaceship, and maybe from earlier than that, Ruby had not said a single word. Sure, Ruby was quiet, a woman of action, not of words, but still.
"Are you all right?" asked Jenny, her voice softly concerned.
There was no better friend than Jenny, Ruby had discovered, concealing an iron-hard resilience and strength beneath a gentle and feminine exterior. Ruby, though equally beautiful, was thin, bronzed, and tough. One would have expected them to hate each other on sight, but such was not the case.
"Yeah, I'm fine," she said. "But assuming they're not cannibals, human eaters, I mean, that wouldn't make them cannibals, would it? But putting that possibility aside,"
she lapsed into what used to be called a brown study, a quick one.
"Yes," said Jenny, curious as to what could be important enough to distract her friend from the drama of the immediate situation.
Ruby looked her straight in the eye.
"What the hell are we going to offer them for dinner?"
The frantic pre-dinner discussion around what exactly to feed the squid and how to ask without offending them went something like this, different voices chiming in.
"What about fish? If they're squid, they live in the ocean, right? So they must eat fish."
Abdulrahim had spent time on the Mediterranean and was fond of fish.
Yeah, but they breathe air and walk around on land. Not exactly typical sea creatures.
That was Ratbone, observant and practical as always.
Well, anyway, maybe they eat plankton and seaweed and stuff.
Ew. Thank you, Nuri. Now is not the time. Why don't we just ask them?
But what if we say something horribly offensive? What if the fish are their friends, or the plankton for that matter? They could decide we're no good and wipe us off the planet. Destroy the Earth.
One of the worry warts found in every crowd.
It's pretty well destroyed already, isn't it? Ruby, another practical one.
Well, we don't know. That's the whole point. The only outside visitors have been Tarzan and the apocalypse zombie, and neither of them has enough brains to explain how they got here, let alone report on conditions outside.
Zombie brains, ha ha ha!
Someone had evidently been telling Nuri old movies as bedtime stories.
Nuri, you are becoming far too American. A little politeness, please.
Geez, Layla, that's pretty harsh.
No offense intended. My heartiest apologies.
Here's the real point. Do we think the squid are the ones who made the barrier wall? Are they the ones keeping us in?
Not us in, everyone else out. Haven't you been paying attention? We could all walk out whistling Dixie and there's nothing to stop us.
Are you kidding? You should have seen Stupid hit that wall. He bounced back.
You didn't see it!
An indignant price check.
But you described it so beautifully.
Sage, you've got to stop missing the meetings. Yeah, I know you're writing the great apocalypse novel, but you gotta pay attention. There's free access out at the highway and at the dirt road at the other end of town. We can get out, but nobody can get in.
While the two couples on the horse had been conducting their searches, those left behind had also been making discoveries, or at least evolving new theories. Several voices broke in at once.
How do you know that?
Has anybody tried?
And what makes you think those exits aren't just part of the area within the perimeter wall? It's a pretty big area. Miles, maybe hundreds of miles.
Yeah, what makes you think it ends outside the city limits in just those two directions?
Well, if you'd been at the meeting...
Ruby enacted one of those compelling silences certain strong personalities can impose with merely a look, a change of expression, a faint body motion.
So, what are we going to feed these squid?